broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. If you don't believe us, if you don't believe the evening and constant preface, if you will, editorial tag that we put on the show, just ask them. All right, our number is, as always, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're also online at philhendryshow.com with live streaming video of the show. You can watch a video cast live from the El Pacifico studios here. Behind me, you see the Pacific Ocean. We also, at times, will show you pictures of news events that we are talking about or should be talking about very, very shortly. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way with me. The story that continues to not only fascinate, because it is a fascinating story. It's about America today. It's about our society. It's also one that revolts. It's one that's frightening. It's the Trayvon Martin story. And certainly it's one that pulls at our heartstrings if we're parents of young people, and particularly African-American parents who we have learned, if you're white, you've learned in the last few days, if you haven't known, that there's a conversation that black parents have with their sons, and it's a conversation having to do with how they're perceived out there in the world. Don't draw attention to yourself. You are black, and you will be seen a certain way. Make sure that you're safe. This is what is called, in the parlance, the conversation, the talk. And in black families, that's a conversation that they have with their kids. So I think that's kind of interesting, because no matter what we think, if you're white in America, no matter what you may think you know, that's one that just is a reality. It's just a fact. So you may think this or that or something else, but these are parents warning their young people. They're not interacting with other parents of other races. On the line with me is Professor Emory Clayton, who is at L.A. Canyon College, and we're going to talk about neighborhood watch groups, the kind of group that George Zimmerman is a member of, the man accused of shooting Trayvon Martin. By the way, the latest news here tonight, forensic experts say newly released video by police of the man who shot Trayvon Martin raises more questions than it answers. But that's not stopping droves of amateur sleuths on TV, Twitter, and Facebook from scrutinizing it anyway. The video should be just a fraction of the evidence available to police as they investigate George Zimmerman's claim that he shot and killed Trayvon Martin, age 17, after the teenager allegedly punched the neighborhood watch volunteer in the nose and slammed his head against the ground. This is, of course, what we're being told by Mr. Zimmerman. It's brought national attention. Mr. Zimmerman's brother said that his brother, Robert Zimmerman, said about his brother George, he's the kind of neighbor that you would want to have, the kind of guy that you would want to have as a neighbor. Robert Zimmerman said the voice heard screaming on the 911 tape is that of his brother, who acted to save his own life. I don't know how Robert Zimmerman knows all of this other than talking to his brother, who I'm sure is going to give a spin on this. Let's talk now to Emory Clayton, a professor of urban studies at L.A. Canyon College. This is really explosive stuff, Professor Clayton.
Well, I don't doubt that it is. And as we continue to talk about these events of that day, Phil, and we continue to discuss who did what and why, I think it's fair to say that the Neighborhood Watch as an entity, as a philosophy, as a neighborhood organization, I think it's fair to say the Neighborhood Watch group, as we have come to know it, should be, if it is not already, a thing of the past.
You're saying to get rid of the Neighborhood Watch entirely?
I am saying that the time has come for people who are members of these kinds of things to recognize that they have empowered and have filled the heads of certain personalities with ideas that they're a sheriff out there in the Wild West, and somehow they're walking down the main street there at high noon, and they're keeping all the criminals, the bad people, away from them. I think this man Zimmerman is doing a real job creating something that just did not exist. Mr. Zimmerman is saying that he was in fear of his own life. He was the man that was following this boy. He was the man who'd been told by the police to stop following this boy. He was the man who was aggressively tailing this young man, who, by the way, was not armed, with a gun, did not have a, what do you call this, concealed weapon permit, right?
Yeah, but, Mr. Zimmerman had a concealed weapons permit.
Right. The Trayvon Martin did not have that. So all of the indications point to, regardless of what this man Zimmerman is saying, everything, the facts that we know point to him being the aggressor. Now, let me say this. I blame, as much as this guy Zimmerman, I blame these neighborhood watch organizations that have empowered these, forgive me for saying, these Looney Tune type people, who, like I said, I think they're Gary Cooper at High Noon or Sylvester Stallone or something in Rocky, that they're running around and protecting everyone. I think it is time that we get rid of the neighborhood watch and we return to relying on the people that we pay for to protect us, the police.
All right, Professor Emory Clayton is with us here from L.A. Canyon College. You want to get rid of the neighborhood watch organization because you don't feel it works anymore?
Because we've got an example here of what it does to the psychology of certain Looney Tunes people like this man Zimmerman. Because what that did was it filled that man's head with all kinds of delusions and fantasies of empowerment and authority and imagining himself to be much bigger than he is, to the point where this man took another man's life because the man didn't look right. Now, I will just give you this bit of information, Phil. In a week's time, we're going to be attending our own neighborhood watch. We have one where we live, and my wife Dawn and I have lived in the same neighborhood here in North L.A. County for the last 16 years now. And we are going to be at a neighborhood watch meeting, one of a rare meeting where all the people are involved next Saturday night. And I am going to be giving these people a bit of a surprise, because in anticipation of presenting this not only on your program tonight but also in front of my class, because we do a study on the urban climate and what that means to society's both present and future, I'm going to be presenting them with the fact that even though we have a neighborhood watch in our neighborhood, I have been going on to my neighbor's property for the last 6 months. And I have been lifting things from their property and putting it in my garage. And I can tell you that not a one of them has come to me or suspected me or said anything to me. We have an active neighborhood watch. And I want to say just one more thing. Most of the people in our neighborhood are white. So,
why is that significant? First of all, you've said a lot of stuff here. Are you saying that you are taking stuff without their knowledge?
I have, for the last 6 months, I have been going on to my neighbor's property, because we've got a fairly new neighborhood. Much of the landscaping is in. A lot of people have not put up fences and so forth. So you've got these wide green spaces that separate the homes. And I've been able to pluck bicycles. I've been able to pluck gardening equipment. I've been able to take things as simple as mops and brooms. And
you're stealing.
No, I'm not stealing. I'm making a point about our neighborhood watch. You understand what I'm saying? I've been able to do this up and down the street. This is something that I have been looking at far before the Trayvon Martin situation. This is something that I have been studying and looking at much, much longer than before this terrible situation in Florida.
Well, the point of this would be to show the
inefficacy, Phil,
of these neighborhood watch groups.
That is correct.
All right. It's a fair question to ask you then. And by the way, folks, our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, are the neighborhood watch groups, as we know them now, a thing of the past. It would be fair to ask you, if this started before the situation with Trayvon Martin, what caused you to begin to investigate this?
Well, because I felt that it was a terrible, not only was it an imposition on a handful of people, because most people are going to take the lead, but also because of what I sent to you. I've got people in my neighborhood, and I'm sure you do in your neighborhood, and people all up and down the country have individuals in their neighborhood, these people who consider themselves to be Gary Cooper and High Noon, like I was saying to you. The sheriff is in town, the mayor of the street, and they want to tell everybody how to do it. I saw these kinds of personalities. And, of course, my fear is when you get these people, I'm black, and I live on a street where there is only one other black family, So we have the rest of these families, some 12 of the families are white.
And what were you afraid of?
I'm afraid of what I was saying to you. You're talking about profiling. Next week, when I present to these people the facts of where their personal effects have gone, I have talked to them before and asked them, who do you suspect? What if it was me? These cats, they're not going to say anything to me because they don't want to appear as if they're profiling me. That's why the neighborhood watch doesn't work.
And you're saying that you went ahead and started stealing this stuff knowing that no one is going to approach you about it because they're afraid that you're going to think you're being profiled.
That is it, exactly. And so...
But let's just talk about this for a second. If they had approached you and said, Professor Emery, you're the one that's taking the stuff...
I would say that you are profiling me as a thief.
But they're not profiling you. You were taking the stuff.
No, but I wasn't taking it to steal it. That's the difference. I was taking it to make a point about how the Neighborhood Watch organization as it exists today, both in our neighborhood and elsewhere, does not work. You understand? So, yes, they would be profiling me. But that's further proof.
All right, so if they suspect that there's a black person in the neighborhood stealing stuff, they're not going to do anything about it.
That is exactly correct. That's why Neighborhood Watch doesn't work. If they approached me, Phil, and they said, we happen to know, Professor Clayton, that you were the one that was taking stuff from the backyards, they would, in fact, be profiling, because I would turn around and say to them, I've been taking that, but not to steal it. I've been taking it to prove a point to you people that your little neighborhood watch hasn't done, as if I can use the lingo that the kids use, hasn't done jack you-know-what, you know.
Well, there's something fundamentally flawed, though, about that, don't you think?
In what sense?
You're going and taking stuff. People don't want to say anything about it because they don't want to profile you. You're proving your point, therefore, that the neighborhood watch is not a good thing. And yet, even if they did approach you about stealing... It would be, in fact, a profile.
They would be profiling me, yes, because I wasn't stealing. And no one would think to ask, well, you're a professor at L.A. Canyon College. You're a professor of urban studies. Is this some kind of a study, or is this some kind of a... Is it some kind of a paper that you're doing? Is it some kind of a thesis that you're testing? No one would say that. Because their mind either goes to either he's a criminal or he is not, and I don't want to profile him.
Interesting. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. I got Professor Emery Clayton on the line here with us from L.A. Canyon College about whether or not the neighborhood watch, the idea of the neighborhood watch, the neighborhood watch organization works anymore. You are convinced it does not.
No, I do not think it works. I don't think you have to go much further than to see what happened in Florida. You're looking at the death of a human being by a so-called neighborhood watch captain. This was a man who, to the extent that these people have ranks, which I think is a little silly, but nonetheless, to the extent that they have some kind of a rank, this captain, so-called, killed a man. And I don't care. I don't care, Phil, if you have, Bugsy Siegel and Al Capone and all these is in your neighborhood looking to steal from you. You, as a private citizen, are endangering yourself and others if you think you're some kind of a block captain. You don't.
All right, let's take a break here. Hold on for a second, Professor Emery Clayton. Our number 877-876-PHIL as we talk about the Neighborhood Watch organization, the Neighborhood Watch idea, the Neighborhood Watch as it's presently constituted in America, does it work anymore? Is it even worth having these organizations in light of what happened in Florida? 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I understand. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Professor Emery Clayton tonight from L.A. Canyon College in North L.A. County as we're talking with him about neighborhood watch organizations and how they no longer quite frankly, are needed. And I would have to ask you this. Are they more dangerous than any good they do?
You've got a dead man in Florida, Phil. Does that answer your question? You've got a dead man in Florida. You've got a man in Florida who's dead, and you've got another man in Florida who imagined himself to be some kind of world beater, some kind of Rambo, some kind of a savior of the innocence of the world. I don't know what this man was on or what kind of imaginings or wild flights of fancy a guy like this has with a concealed weapon. I'd like to find out who gave this man the concealed weapon permit. Why does this man need a concealed weapons permit? I think really what ought to be looked into, if you want a real a clear-eyed view of this, is what is wrong with the state of Florida? Because I know America's got all kinds of problems, but I've never seen a state, a single state, like Florida, with as many cockamamie ideas of doing things.
And well, we can indict the entire state, but tonight we're just focusing on the idea of neighborhood watch, okay?
Well, that's true, but I'm just saying, you know, at the very heart and soul of this, along with the idea of neighborhood watch, is this stand-your-ground law that they have in Florida, which is about as ridiculous a thing. I don't think anybody down there, including the guys that wrote that law, can really tell you what it means. I don't think anybody that wrote, I've listened to the men that wrote that law, I don't think those men can actually define the terms they use, actually can tell you, well, if you stand your ground, where is the line that you draw that you don't back up over? I don't think there's a one of them down there that can do that, because I don't frankly think that they've got the brain power in the Florida legislature.
Well, I don't want to indict Florida. It's off of the topic, okay?
I understand that.
The topic is really neighborhood watch. I mean, yeah, it was a Florida neighborhood watch.
Well, the Florida the neighborhood watch as a way of protecting the neighborhood is dead. It died in Florida at the end of February. It's gone. Now,
all right, I want to get to this thing, though, that I want to be clear about what you're saying. You went into your neighbor's yards where you live, and you took stuff from their yards.
That is correct, yes.
All right. In taking this stuff from their yards, you were proving what point?
I was proving the point, Phil, that neighborhood watch is an amusing little title that you give a group of people that live on the same street who have a little sign in their window, but it is not effective. I was able to steal, for the last 6 months, items from just about every family that lives on our street. Steal bicycles, golf clubs, sports equipment of all kinds, cleaning equipment, a lawnmower. I was able to steal this and put this in my garage. Now, I know for a fact that even if they saw me stealing this stuff, they'd be afraid to come up to me and say, Professor Clayton, we think you were stealing, because they're afraid of profiling me. Correct?
That's your thesis. I don't know if that's true.
All right. But even if they did come up and ask me, Professor Clayton, do you have these items? I would say to them, no, I don't. And why are you asking? You think I'm a thief? You're profiling me as a thief.
But again, you are stealing.
No, I'm not stealing. This is a paper that I'm doing for our school. The stuff, I'm giving the stuff back.
And all right, but that's what I mean. This is a neat little conundrum that you've sort of developed here.
No, there's no conundrum at all, Phil. If you listen to what I'm saying, I'm a teacher. I'm a professor. I've been teaching for the last 27 years. I know how to teach and to impart an idea. And
no, but what you're saying is there's no way anybody can come up to you and say you've got our stuff because, number one, they wouldn't do it for fear of being profilers. Number two, even if they did do it, they would be profiling because you didn't steal.
But I didn't steal. No, I did not steal.
And what if they needed that bicycle?
Phil, I've got to tell you, that's one that my wife mentioned to me, and that is, forgive me, Phil, because I like you, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
And why?
Because no one in the state of California, or any other state for that matter, needs a bicycle. You understand? No one needs their golf clubs. I stole things that are not needed. You understand what I'm saying? And by stealing these things, which, by the way, I'm not stealing. I'm giving these things back at the Neighborhood Watch semi-annual that we're having next week. I'm giving it all back to them.
You know, I'm sorry. I'm listening. I'm having a hard time. You're trying to make the point that the neighborhood watches of America are obsolete. They are part and parcel what killed that young man. In the meantime, you're out trying to prove your point by stealing this stuff and admitting that people would be afraid of challenging you. I don't get it.
You don't get it. I'm telling you why neighborhood watches failed.
All right, 877-876-7445. 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Be back with your calls and Professor Clayton right after this.
You rolled your eyes. I saw that on your video, Chad. You rolled your eyes like I'm some kind of a weird ass.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line is Professor Emory Clayton from L.A. Canyon College as we talk about the Neighborhood Watch organization, the Neighborhood Watch group. It's something that's been around America for quite some time, since the 70s at least. And it is your proposal that this be eliminated, Professor Clayton. You're a professor of urban studies, so this is a part of what it is that you study. But your experiment has gone even further in so far as you removing items from a neighbor's yard. It sounds like you're stealing.
It may sound like I'm stealing, but I'm not stealing because the items are going back to my neighbors. What I am doing, Phil, I'm wanting you to listen to what I'm saying, and I hope other people listening will do the same thing. What I'm doing is I'm removing items from their yards, and I'm doing it every week, and I've got 6 months' worth of stolen items in my garage. Now, they're not really stolen.
Because someone called and said you've said the word stolen, so you've admitted to stealing.
No, I have not admitted to stealing. I just got done saying they're not really stolen. I said I stole them, but I'm giving them back. So I have not stolen anything. What I've done is proven a point that the neighborhood watch in my neighborhood and elsewhere in America is not worth the paper either that they wrote the agreement on. I don't know even how these neighborhood watch groups are constituted, Phil.
All right, our number 877-876-7445. Here is a gentleman named George. George, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Good evening, Phil.
Good evening.
My name is George. I'm from the Virgin Islands, so forgive my accent a little bit.
That's okay. That's all right.
How are you, George? This is Emory. How are you? I've got family in the Caribbean.
In St. Thomas. Okay, thanks.
Yes, sir. Very good. I have family from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. You know where that is, correct, sir?
Oh, great. Yes. Yes,
yes sir. Yes, sir.
The professor, you're the professor. What you are saying, it is very true. Very, 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 very true.
Absolutely.
This neighborhood watch thing, it isn't worth the paper it's written on. It's
not
no
at
good.
All, sir.
It's
no, sir.
No, it's evil. Very, very
evil. I think what it does is it encourages people to act like they're some kind of cowboy. You ever seen a cowboy movie?
Like a Rambo or something.
Like a Rambo. There you go. Like one of these guys. Exactly.
I got to tell you this, that I'm a security guard. I'm an armed security guard. As we speak,
yes,
I'm working, and I'm armed.
Yes. Yes,
I was living in Jacksonville in Florida. I'm in New York City now. I'm working. I'm on my job, and I'm armed to the teeth. I'm always
armed. Yes, sir.
Anywhere you see me, I'm always armed.
Even when you're off duty? Even when you're off duty, do you carry that weapon around?
Yes, yes.
Yes, sir.
I do not, not for anything.
Where do you live, sir? You live in New York City, you said. I would walk around armed in New York City, too. I live in California, but I live in a very sparsely populated area of California. Yes, sir, go ahead.
Let's listen to George. Phil. George, I want to ask you a question. So the neighborhood watch in your area, I think you indicated to us, they have radios, though. So isn't the neighborhood watch in your area a better thing?
What do they got?
They have
radios.
Radio. They got radio, not the type of radio that you can see.
What good is that going to do, though, George? Because you got to get on the phone and got to call the police. Now, I've got to tell you, George, and I'm sure the police in New York City, I don't know, but if they hear your very thick St. Thomas accent and the police hear some man say, "We need the police," and they hear your St. Thomas accent, you know these cops. Well, hell, I'm not going down there for sure. Some guy to come over wet, you know.
No, these radio connected back to what you call it?
A police station.
No, the head office. Right in your shirt. You know, some police got some radio. They don't hold that radio. The radio's on your shoulder.
Right, but when you're talking into that radio, who are you talking to? Are you talking to the police? Are you talking to Little Red Riding Hood? Who are you talking to, see?
You're talking to your command office. Once you
All right.
know someone is in the neighborhood and blah, 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 they take care of business from there.
And who is the command office? Is the police, right?
No, the command office is the people that send you out to work. Is work you're working. Your neighborhood watch is work you're working. So you make...
Okay, so this neighborhood watch, I want to ask...
Go your button in. I'm talking to a gentleman of color. We're both the same color. And if you don't mind...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, George, but you and I are both black, so we speak a common language. And we speak the language of the city. We speak the language of security. We know what secures our families and what doesn't. Now, if you have a neighborhood watch, and a man, I get on a horn and I say, "Hey, look, I got some stranger here. He's coming down the street. I don't like the looks of this guy." Who am I? I'm talking to you. I'm talking to some guy with a baseball bat. Who am I talking to? A police officer?
No, you're speaking to your command office. It's like you're working security, and you got to be at your command office before.
And the guy in the command office, this is some guy with a T-shirt. With a big Mickey Mouse face on it, or what's he look like?
No, that's an officer. He's dressed like a policeman. He is dressed like a policeman, and he's indoors.
But he's a Mickey Mouse. He's a Mickey Mouse man, right? He ain't real cop.
No, he ain't.
What do you mean a Mickey Mouse?
He ain't no real cop.
Again,
they got
you're the wrong color for this discussion, Phil. The wrong color.
You know what? I'm the host of the show, though.
I understand that, but you're the wrong color for this discussion. He is a security guard, did you say, George?
Yeah, he is. He is.
I got you. Okay. I got to tell you something, George. I agree with you there because I wouldn't. I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't give you two hoots and a holler for some clown in a monkey suit. You know, some kind of security suit. Now I know that's what you do for a living, and I'm not calling you out on that.
No, you don't.
But I'm saying somebody. You know what I'm saying, some of these clowns.
You can't put me in a monkey suit. I'm wearing ordinary clothes. You don't know I'm...
You're wearing ordinary, exactly. You're not running around looking like you're Barney Fife.
No,
you
I'm
see
not,
what I'm saying?
I'm not running around to shoot people either. I'm watching strange movement in my area, in the area in which I'm working, because there's other people working on the other side.
And I can tell you, right, and I can tell you, just as a joke, you ought to come to my house some night, George, and just come on in the back door. You see some strange movement. My wife, when she gets her sister over here, and they start listening to some of their records, you know, some of the music they love.
Okay, that's real funny.
Again, Phil, wrong color.
No, I got to move on. I appreciate very much, George. So, George, your essential point is that you agree with Professor Clayton that these neighborhood watch things are wrong.
It sounds like you don't believe in what I'm saying. It's like you like one of those prejudiced white guys, right? You sound
Who,
like
me?
One anyway. Yeah, you.
No. How am I prejudiced? How am I prejudiced?
Because
you are prejudiced, Bill.
You're telling me you come and loan your wife this, and I don't want to hear about
no,
that.
No. I'm a black man. The man you're talking to right now, I'm a black man. I'm the Professor Clayton. I'm black.
You sound prejudiced.
How am I prejudiced? How do you figure I'm prejudiced when I say you ought to come to my house with my wife and her sisters come over here
because
on a Saturday
you sound
night?
Like you don't believe what I'm telling you. Why don't you come? Why don't you come in the South Bronx if you don't believe what I'm telling you?
I believe what you're saying.
No, you don't.
But I don't think these security guys that you're talking about.
What?
With the clown outfit. You telling me you got some security people there in a clown outfit. Didn't you say that?
No, I didn't tell you that.
What you talking about, the neighborhood watch? You said there's a neighborhood watch, and they're talking gibberish into a radio, and they got some guy at a command office, and you said the whole thing's a mess.
No, they're not talking no gibberish.
That's what I heard.
Talking gibberish.
No, that's exactly what you said, sir.
You
said, didn't you tell me the neighborhood watch? Didn't you tell me the neighborhood watch was a bunch of hooey? You were agreeing with me.
A bunch of what?
You were agreeing with me.
A bunch of what?
What's that? A bunch of hooey.
Come on, man. You're putting them. Wait. Look. You're just making joke, man. You're making. What are you doing on the radio? You ain't.
What are you doing on the radio? Better question is, what are you doing on the radio? You don't understand a thing I'm saying. I think what you ought to do is.
You know what your problem is?
If you're a security guard, I bet you there are about five people that got in there robbed, whatever it is you're supposed to
be. You should be that guy that got hurt in Florida. You should be that guy. People like you should
be. Yeah, well, you probably are going to be the guy that hurt him. You're probably on your way to being the guy that hurt him, the way you're talking.
Okay, all right, well, fine. So that was really great. I thought you guys agreed with each other, but apparently you don't. Thank you. I don't understand that line of questioning. And for you to say that I don't belong in a conversation because I'm the wrong color.
I was making headway with that gentleman. All I'm saying is the man understood me, and when you began to interject yourself, Phil, I'm not trying to blame you, but when you did interject yourself, that man became scared. He became confused. He didn't know what language. It sounded to me like he didn't understand English after a while.
Well, it sounded to me as if he thought you were messing with him. But I can understand the confusion. He was saying that he didn't believe in Neighborhood Watch. You don't believe in Neighborhood Watch. He said that he had a Neighborhood Watch there.
Whoa, hold on for a minute, will you, Phil? Because, again, you don't understand. I knew what he was saying. He was saying that the Neighborhood Watch, as it presently is constituted, he agreed with me, is no good. But there in the Bronx where he lives, he's got people dressed up in some kind of security outfits, and they're walking around with radios, and they look like fools. And they may wind up getting somebody killed, see? And
no, he said they were unarmed. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the key. I'm trying to tell you that the Neighborhood Watch doesn't work because I've proven it doesn't work. I'm not some guy sitting on my ass just over from the Bimini or wherever, the Bermuda, wherever he's from, and I'm passing judgment. I went into my neighbor's yards and stole hundreds of dollars worth of equipment. But I didn't steal it, you understand? I'm giving it back. But
to prove that the Neighborhood Watch doesn't work. Right. All right. All right. We're going to take a break here. 877-876-7445 is the number. 877-876-7445. That conversation with that gentleman in the Bronx, that went nowhere. Although I understand that he agrees with Professor Clayton. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
No way. It would have gone somewhere had you not butted in.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Do voters tell the truth when they're talking to exit polls? Are voters, are citizens telling the truth when they're talking to pollsters? Well, we're going to have a discussion with Don Berman from Channel 19 News next hour on that very topic. Right now, our number 877-876-PHIL, as we discuss with Professor Emery Clayton, the Neighborhood Watch philosophy. And as Professor Clayton has been talking about this hour, as he discusses with his class and this thesis that you formed, that the Neighborhood Watch is pretty much out of date.
Absolutely, Phil.
All right, but there's also the matter of you and the methods that you use in proving this. You have yourself injected yourself into this by taking things from your neighbor's yards.
We have a very active neighborhood watch in our community. I say active because they meet semi-monthly. They are constantly door-to-door and constantly handing out these flyers and emailing and so forth. So they are very active. And to be able to abscond with this property under their noses makes a joke out of these people. And on top of that, because I'm African-American, they wouldn't dare say anything to me about stealing because it would be profiling. And even if they did.
That's the point there that is very difficult for me. Even if they did, you're still not stealing. And so it's still
profiling. Yes, it is.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. We'll go to a phone call. We've got Damien. Damien, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
How you doing? Just a little bit about me. I'm a Latino, and I'm also a musician. Actually, on my way home from a gig, and so I've had my fair share of profiling. You know, everybody thinks musicians are into drugs, and Latinos are a whole bunch of things. So I'm not one to disagree with someone, for the most part, regarding the occurrence of racial profiling and things like that. But that said, this thesis of yours, Professor, it's kind of along the lines of, while there's no crime that you're trying to entrap them in, it's kind of along the lines of entrapment in the sense that you're creating a situation where they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. And, you know, you put yourself in a situation, first of all, thievery is thievery, even if you plan on returning it. They didn't know you were taking it, so it is stealing.
That is not stealing, because I'm going to give it back to them. Now, let's just be clear here. I'm not entrapping anybody other than the fact that I was born black. If you say being born black entraps someone, well, you might have a point. But I had no control over that.
What I'm saying is that, you know, they're by your claim, they're profiling you if they don't come after you, and they're profiling you if they do come after you. So how is it?
No, they're not. If they don't come after me, they are avoiding profiling me. Yes, you're right. They recognize that I'm black, but they don't want to look like racist, so they won't say anything to me. But that's not profiling. That's just trying to be a good neighbor. And
well, I maintain that is profiling.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. Wait a second. Hold on for a minute. This is a Latino, and again, you're white.
What has that got to do with anything? This gentleman's white.
He's a Latino.
Well, let me ask you. How do you know what color my skin is? Because of my
No. You said you're Latino. You already said. So I consider you to be a man of. Yeah, Latinos are white, but I consider you still to be a member of a minority group. Latinos are white.
Latinos
are. Yes, they are. But you're also
a
minority.
What color was Roberto Clemente?
He was white.
Have you seen a picture?
He was a white man.
And Roberto Clemente was black.
Wait a minute, Phil. Every time you talk, you're a white man. And
I know, I'm not allowed in this conversation. This man's making some good points, though.
He may be making some good points, but when you butt in, you've just dropped dropped more white into the conversation. What I'm saying to you, sir, I'm not, are you trying to entrap me? That's what you're doing.
I'm trying to get at the point that Latino is not black or white. Latino can be either.
Latino is Latino, but I'm saying that Henry here is white man, so it disqualifies him right away. Now, if you're being profiled, someone says to you, that may be true when it comes to lovemaking, you know, but I ain't talking to you about that right now. You know what I'm saying, though, right?
Yeah, he understands what you're saying.
Boy, here comes the white man again.
You know what? I'm the host of the show, so I've got to jump in and say things.
In any point, the point I'm trying to make here, very simply, this. If you don't want to confront me about stealing your gardening equipment or your lawnmower or whatever it is you got, that shows that you have the common courtesy and the decency not to confront me about stealing something, even though I'm black, or even though you're black, even though I'm black. If you look at me and you say I'm black and you accuse me of stealing, then you are profiling me, even though I did take that stuff, I wasn't stealing it. You understand what I'm saying, sir? So the difference, I guess he's not there anymore, but the difference that I've...
No, well, what you're saying is doesn't sound right. What you're talking about doesn't sound right. What you're talking about sounds to me like something that continues to be just a smoke screen of some kind. Let's see, do we have Paul?
Yeah.
Paul, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I let him know that I am black. I was born black, and there's no other color mixed in there but black.
This gentleman's
black. When I say this, I'm not, you know, talking like somebody from someplace else, but he is so full of crap, it's unreal. I hope he turns his stuff into his neighbors. I hope
young
he
man,
turns
I've got
into his neighbors. Let me finish. You had your minute. Mine. I hope you get arrested. You deserve to be arrested. You are
arrested
a disgrace to all black men out there. And to use
that shows how racially uneducated you are.
To use the word professor in a way that makes you seem to be smart is a disgrace to people that are
I'm
professors.
I'm a professor at a college. Doesn't make me seem to be smart. I'm a
to
teacher.
Everybody.
I'm
you're teaching
to tell
people
you.
That it's okay to steal. You're teaching
no,
people
I'm not.
It's okay to steal. Yes, you are.
No,
you
I'm
just
not.
Said you stole stuff and it's okay. That's like saying...
No,
okay.
I'm giving it back.
Other things,
I'm giving it back.
You still stole it. You still stole it.
How can you steal it if
you
give it back?
A thief. Did you give it back?
No.
If you took it.
Why can't you? You are so brainwashed. The white man has brainwashed you. Boy, the white man has brainwashed you.
Thief.
You got your hair. Your brain was washed in white. They put your brain into white and washed it.
You deserve a set of bracelets from the police department. That guy in the watch, I hope he's the one that cuts you off. I hope he does.
Which guy? Anybody in neighborhood watch? This guy in my neighborhood watch?
You off.
That man hadn't been born yet. Neighborhood watch guy gonna cart me up? Ain't gonna happen. Your brain was taken out of your skull.
You are
and washed in a big bathtub of white.
You're on national radio telling people you stole stuff.
No, I'm telling people that I did this as a part of a thesis
you
on getting rid of neighborhood watch. I took a guy's
you
golf
told
club.
Everybody
I
on the radio that you are
you
a
are. Okay, and now you are you're like a black puppet sitting on a white man's knee. You know what? If I ever saw you on my neighborhood watch, I'd say, beware. If you open up that man's head, you look inside the brain, you're gonna see white.
Okay, is that thank you very much. We'll be back next hour with Don Berman.
I'm still here.
Well, we don't want you here anymore. It's the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't, to provide you with the very finest in talk radio entertainment. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. We have live streaming video of our show. We have podcasts of each show available. We have archives that go back over a decade of full radio shows. You will not find a radio show or radio station website anywhere on the face of the earth with an archive the size of ours, if you'll pardon me about, you know, talking about size. But the fact of the matter is, no one can match ours at all. Let them whip it out. So the archive that we have, we're very proud of, because we're very proud of the radio show that we do, and we have full three-hour shows. There's nobody out there that does that, nobody out there that can match it, no one out there that would dare match it, because they just ain't got the material. So when you get a subscription to our website, you're getting every penny's worth. When you get a backstage pass to the Phil Hendry Show website, you're getting every penny's worth. And we're talking about full three-hour shows going back over a decade. That comes out to thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of a radio show that has been talked up and admired by people like Rush Limbaugh, that has been talked up and admired by people like Glenn Beck, that has been talked up and admired by people like Howard Stern, that has been talked up and admired by Clint Eastwood. I mean, I'm not dropping names. This is a fact, man. Not that Clint Eastwood...
Do you even listen to radio anymore?
You probably can't even get... I'm kidding around. I shouldn't say that. But the fact is, the show is a great show, and we've got the hours and hours and hours and hours of great radio to prove it. So go over to our website, get a backstage pass, and I'll tell you something right now. You know, there's all kinds of people who want your money. There's no question about it. You know, our monthly is less than what Sirius is stealing. Our monthly is less than what a lot of these sites steal. And we give you far more. Far, far more for the dollar. So quit screwing around and throwing your money away. And get a backstage pass to our website. Check out our shop. And take a look at all of the merchandise that we have to offer. Look at our news feed. You can see that it's uncensored. We got all kinds of crybabies that get on there. There are all kinds of people. We don't censor it. Everybody gets on there and bitches and pisses and moans. And then we have people that love the show. And then we have people that are looking for information. Then we have this, that, all kinds of stuff happening over there. And then we have a lot of extras like the Hendry Family home movies. So you're looking at home movies shot by my father between the years 1945 and 1982. So you've got that. You've got a peek right into the dysfunctional life of the Hendry family.
Yay!
Thank you. Like that, Bud, huh?
That's great.
I mean, I can't even think of it. There's so much stuff. We got webisodes, animated webisodes done by Stephen White. So if you want to keep throwing your money away on all of these jive-ass radio subscription, firewall, this, that, somebody, everybody's looking for your dollar. Ours is worth it, man. Worth it. Phil Henry Show, Backstage Pass. Check it out. All right. Don Berman is going to be joining us here this hour to talk about, I think this is a fascinating topic. It has to do with whether or not the voters, the electorate, the citizens, the people, folks that are talked to when they're coming out of that polling place, are they telling the truth? Are they telling the truth? Are they actually telling the truth when they are interviewed by those exit pollers? And from the Channel 19 newsroom, it is Don Berman. How are you this evening, Don?
Well, I'm very well, and thank you. I think you'll find it interesting what we came up with, because it's not often that you announce a special and then you have to go to your editor, you have to go to your manager, the managing desk in the newsroom, and say, I think we're going to have to cancel this. But it is a fascinating story indeed.
You have to cancel this particular report that you're going to do?
We may have to cancel the report. And that in and of itself is a story. So I've been talking to Rich Sugarman, who is our managing editor, and saying, you know, we've got something even better. We have the truth. And
well, let's back up and get people some idea what you're talking about. You are discussing the truthfulness of exit polls.
Yeah. We every election, Phil, your audience knows, and I do, and you do, every election we are looking at the big network talking heads, and they are telling us, well, based on our exit polling, this, that, this, and that. We find this from all of the TV networks that we watch. We find it from the cable news channels, and we certainly do see it even now in our local reporting. We do it here in Los Angeles when we're covering the countywide races, or we're covering the citywide races. Over the last 30 days, I went out along with Donna DeCarver, along with many of the news assistants and our production assistant, Billy Wells. And we went out, and we had asked people, and primarily men, some very specific questions. And it was based upon my own personal experience. As a man, and it could be true of you, Phil, I don't know. But as a man, I've been a single man. I wasn't married throughout my adult life. I've been single in stretches of significant numbers of years, 5 years. Right now, I've been single for the last 7 years. And you find yourself doing a lot of really crazy things in order to be with a woman intimately. And
so this is going to have to do with voting, right?
It has to do with voting, but it's coming at it from a different direction. I have found myself in my life doing some pretty embarrassing things. I found myself in my life doing some pretty disgraceful things in order to be with a woman sexually.
You want to give us an example?
Well, no, I don't think I need to give you an example, because if you think honestly about it, you will come up with some yourself in your own life. So, and I don't want you to, but I want you to just hold that question. I am representative of a lot of men, most adult men. And we're talking about adult men, heterosexual men. I'm talking about women, but although I'm sure it's true of gay men. But I have done some things that have made me ashamed to be with a woman.
It has made you ashamed to be with a woman?
No, it has made me ashamed. I've done things that have made me ashamed in order for me to be with a woman.
So in other words, to impress a woman...
Yeah, well, to impress her, get her phone, to actually get into bed with her. And again, if you think about it, Phil, you know it's true in your own life. And this is not a judgment on your character. Well, we went out last month, and we went to men in the city of Los Angeles, on the street, in shopping malls, in coffee shops, in restaurants, even here in our own newsroom, and we asked them what is the most depraved or the most embarrassing, the most disgusting thing that you've ever done in order to be intimate with a woman in order to get into a woman's bed. And what we found out was revealing. Almost, I would say, 80 to 85% of these men said, I've never done anything like that. I've never really had to do that. I've never debased myself in any way. Now, that is a bald-faced lie.
And how do you know that?
How do I know it? As I said, Phil, if you think honestly about this, you know for a fact that you yourself have done some pretty vile and disgusting things in order to work your way into a woman's bed.
And well, you know what? I mean, you're right. I'm going to have to sit down and think about it because nothing really is happening off the top of my head.
Well, when we were asking these questions, we gave people the chance to answer. We said, think about it. Think, what have you done? I know in my life I have, and there's no way that I interview, and what was our control group, Mary? Was what? 2,500 men. There's no way that 80 to 85% of them said, I can't think of anything, or I never did anything that debased or disgraceful. That is a lie, and that, Phil, is an example of what we're getting in exit polling. You see what I'm saying?
Well, the question's very different. You're asking people, you're asking men, what vile and disgusting thing have you done in order to get into bed with a woman? That's the one.
Yeah.
But then the exit poll questions are, who'd you vote for? Now, don't you think that one is asking for relatively easy information and the other is not?
No, I don't, not at all. But beyond that, all we're asking for is some truthfulness. And if it's so difficult for a person to be truthful when you ask them about something that has got to be true, I refuse to believe, Phil, that I'm the only man in America that has debased himself and has done things that I wouldn't tell. I'm not the only one, and there's no way that I am the only one. And that's what really, I originally got very angry about it. And then I started to laugh. Then I realized what was going on, and I remember that Billy Wells and some of the people were looking at me as if there was something wrong with me. I started to laugh. I said, you've got to understand what's going on here. These guys are afraid to be honest. And I said, I tell you what we got is a news story, and it's about the truthfulness of people in exit polling. You get that? And if it, yeah. It's the truthfulness of people in exit polling.
Well, is it not a leap to say if someone's not being honest when you're asking them a question about their sex life? Is it not a leap to say that they therefore are going to be dishonest when you're asking them questions?
No, not at all. Why is that a leap? They're both highly guarded areas of our lives. The vote, as we've been told time and again, is a private vote. We have the right to the private vote in America and a secret ballot. And the other question has to do, obviously, with one's intimacy. What kind of depths are you willing to sink to become intimate with a woman? And when I ask that question of men, and
Well, isn't it a really personal question?
It's not a personal question if you just say, you know, what depths have you sunk to? And they give you, I didn't want the details. I just wanted to know how low they'd gone.
You're making an assumption that men have gone to the depths of depravity in order to be intimate with a woman. And you're just saying that happened.
I'm telling you, yes, it has happened. Yes. I'm not the only one. I'm not one of these people that says, oh, gee, maybe I'm the only one. No, I'm not. I swear to God, I'll bet you any amount of money you've got that those 85% were lying through their teeth. And that's why when you look at these exit polls, that's what they're doing as well.
877-876-PHIL is the number. Hold on for a minute, Don. I just put him on hold. 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're talking here to Don Berman tonight about exit polling. Are people telling the truth when they are asked as they come out of the polling booth, who did you vote for? Are they telling the truth or are they lying? Don has found in some polling that he's done on men and their sexual habits that he feels 85% of these men are lying, and so therefore they must be lying when they come out of these polling places. 877-876-PHIL is our number here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as we talk with Don Berman. We'll be back with more when we come back. I still think he's making a big leap here.
The Phil Henry Show.
And we have on the line with us here Don Berman from Channel 19 News, and talking to Don tonight about people being truthful in exit polls, people being truthful in the way they answer exit polls. And I've long suspected, Don, that people fudge the truth, if you want to call it that. You know, you use the stronger word lie, and that's just as true.
It absolutely is a lie, and the reason why I think it's a lie, Phil, is if you are fudging the truth, as you say, with the answer you give to someone who's conducting an exit poll, what you're really doing is you're giving faulty information in a very vital area. If you don't want to answer the question, I think that's one thing, but if you answer in a false way, then you're distorting information that we really desperately need. When I went out and I asked men, can you tell me, and I hear what you're saying about it being personal, but these are men, and men generally are going to talk straight to other men. And I even said to these men that I had done some pretty vile things in order for me to be intimate with a woman. I've told lies. And I've places I don't want to go with you on the air, but I said to these guys, thinking that this would prompt them to be honest with me. And do you want to know what happened?
They were not honest with you.
They were not honest with me.
Give me an example of the kind of answer you got.
Well, when I said to these men, the question was basically, can you tell me the lowest you've sunk morally in order for you to be intimate with a woman, to have sex with a woman? And the answer that we got most often than not was they said something like, I told her that I had condoms and I didn't. Now, that is pretty weak.
Well, it's still kind of a significant...
Well, it's not that significant in terms of... I had just gotten done telling these guys some pretty disgusting things, and I said, this is what I've done. This is where I've gone. This is what I, and I'm a news anchor. I'm a well-known individual in the Los Angeles market and nationally, because I've done some national reporting. And I was forthcoming with them, and I said, I've been honest with you. I've told you what I did. I've done some things that were pretty horrible in order to be in bed with a woman. And you guys are saying to me, well, the worst thing you ever did was you told her you thought maybe you had condoms, and it turned out you didn't. And they would sort of give you that half smile and nod, like, uh-huh. So it was then that I went back to the office, and I wasn't feeling too good for a couple of days, but I thought on it, and I thought on it, and I thought on it. I went home, and, you know, there was a pretty low period there, but I finally came back to the office, and I said to you, Billy, I said, you know what this is about? This is about how people lie when they take exit polls.
Well, let's look at the other side. Well, we'll get to a phone call here, but let's look at the other side of this. The possibility that they're not lying, that they're telling the truth.
That's impossible. I'll bet you any amount of money you've got. Any amount of money that you've got.
Well, that's not scientific. If you say, well, that's impossible, you have to have some...
No, I'm telling you, I'll bet you any amount of money that you've got that's impossible. No guy that I talk to, men, don't tell me that they haven't done some disgusting things in order to get in bed with a woman. It's impossible. And that's, you know...
All right, hold on. Let's get to a phone call here. We got Charlie talking to us here tonight. Charlie, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Berman. Go ahead.
Hello, Phil. How are you doing this evening?
Good.
Mr. Berman, I've not had the pleasure of watching you on television. But my understanding is you're a news anchor. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct.
And you're out and you're telling people that you have done some what you call these disgusting things to have sex with a woman.
Yes, sir. That was all covered in the interview, the pre-interview I did with Mr. Hendry. Do you have a comment you want to make?
Yes, I do have a comment I want to make. The comment that I want to make is, if you're saying that you've done, I've been married 37 years.
And you're going to tell me you never did anything disgusting to get into bed with your wife?
No, I did not do anything disgusting to get into bed with my wife. No, I did not.
And
you're going to call me a liar.
Well, yes, sir, I am calling you a liar. And here is the thing. I don't mean you're a liar in a bad way.
And, I see. When you call me a liar, what do you mean it then?
Well, I don't. In other words, I'm not calling into question the quality of man you are, but I'm just saying, in order for you to get into bed with the woman that you've been married to for 37 years, and I would ask you this, is the sex that good?
You know, you are asking some questions.
Don, that's not appropriate.
Well, I don't know why.
You're asking some questions that are, as Mr. Henry indicated, it's far from appropriate about whether the sex is good. I love my wife very much, and our intimate life is great. And,
all right, well, there's a lie.
I beg your pardon, sir? You're calling that a lie?
Yes, I am calling that a lie. You know that you're lying through your teeth, because no man's life after 37 years is sex life with his wife is good.
And, well, you know what? The only dishonesty, Mr. Berman, that's been going on here is your dishonesty with Mr. Henry and the audience tonight, because you're saying that you can bet any amount of money. That is, Mr. Henry indicated, that's not proof.
I'll bet you any amount of money you got. I know you're, well...
Why can you not believe this man?
Who am I talking with?
Phil.
Oh, my God. Was that you, Mr. Henry? Because I heard it. I heard a very high-pitched squealing. And
that was my voice. I'm asking you a good question. Why will you not believe this man?
Because it's impossible for a man to say, I've never sunk to the depths of moral depravity in order to get into bed with a woman. It's impossible.
I am here to tell you.
877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with Don Berman and his exit poll conundrum.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking with Don Berman from Channel 19 News here tonight as we discuss this idea of exit polling and whether or not the voters are truthful that you've been trying to tie, Don, to this question of morality.
And it's frustrating, if I could jump in.
Well, let me just bring my audience up to the present point here. You have tied the question that you asked men...
Yes, right. The question I asked men, if I could...
Go ahead.
...is what kind of morally depraved act, what kind of moral depravity, what kind of low and base... And if you want to use the word disgusting, we can use that. But what have you been willing to do and what have you done... in order to induce a woman to get into bed with you?
See, first of all, that's a question that I find. What woman would get into bed with a guy who has conducted himself in a morally depraved way?
Well, that's what you're missing. I'm not going to the woman and saying, hey, can I conduct a morally depraved act? She doesn't know.
So it's dishonest.
Of course it is. Of course it is. Hold on for a minute. Hey, Billy. Yes, Billy. Billy Wells, Phil.
I don't, you know, I don't, you're, the example you're giving...
Hold on, slow down.
The example you're giving is so,
So what?
So it's not related to what you're talking about.
We're talking about whether people are truthful or not. Henry doesn't understand it. You know,
you don't have to talk to Billy Wells, whoever he is. You can talk to me.
Billy Wells is one of the best editors in the business. Isn't that right, Billy? He's just screwing around. I'm sorry.
Would you mind?
I apologize.
So what we're talking about here is whether those questions relate. Now, the exit poll question is one that, you know, you haven't really asked other than to, well, if these guys are lying about their sexual habits...
Not their sex. Yeah, in a way it is. It's asking, what moral depredation have you involved yourself with in order to have sex with a woman? Gee, I haven't done anything like that. I take that information, extrapolate from that they're lying through their teeth, they're liars, and that's what we go on the air with. I think it's a very sound report.
All right, 877-876-7445 on the Phil Henry Show. Let's go over to Bobby on the Phil Henry Show. Bobby, how you doing tonight?
Oh, hi, Phil. Steve is Steve, my husband. And is Mr. Berman?
Don Berman here, yes.
Yes, I'm with my husband. We were asking this question, and obviously Steve and I were discussing this. He's my husband, but he was never dishonest with me. But he does have something that you think it qualifies, Steve?
No, I think it's probably moral depraved.
He considers it to be moral depravity. At the time, I did, too.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that he was honest? Was this about the two of you?
Yes, it was when we were dating.
And I'm assuming you're married?
I did.
That's her husband, Steve Dooley.
I don't know these people. I'm married to her.
Mr. Henry knows who we are. We're regular guests. We're probably more regular guests than you are, and I don't say that to lord it over you.
All right, fine. Good for you. You know, ding, ding for you.
But I didn't say it to say ding, ding for me.
All right, well, let's just move on with this. So Steve called in with an example.
Yeah, but before we... is that Steve? Mr. Dooley, is that you? Yeah, I'm right here. Talk about it. All right, so this gentleman, Ms. Dooley, is your husband, and he conducted himself in a morally depraved way, but you're telling me you knew about it.
Well, yes. In other words, he was not dishonest, and that might be why you're having a hard time with this, because... I don't know that, it's not so much that men are not morally, if you want to call it that, depraved, it's that they're not dishonest about it.
Yeah, what did you do, Mr. Dooley?
What?
What did you do? What act of moral depravity?
But at the top of the store got the liquid butter.
I can't hear the man. Why is he not?
I don't do it, because I speak for the two of us, really. When we called in, I wasn't even sure if I wanted to have Steve on the air.
Ms. Dooley is the president of her homeowners association.
The what?
She's the president of her homeowners association.
All right, so she's the president of her homeowners association. Big deal. Does that give her the right to insult me and say, I'm on the show more often than you?
You insulted me when you went ding, ding for me. You know,
well, I don't understand what any of this has to do.
Wait, the man answered your question. Did you not have a question?
Yes, I want to know what depravity.
Well, Steve, just answer. Steve, say it again.
I got out liquid butter before I pulled over.
Steve pulled over for liquid butter.
Steve pulled over for liquid butter. Is that what she said?
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Well, it was going on our first date. When I went by a bond, I pulled over.
On our very first date together, when we had gone out, we went to where were we, Steve?
On
the Blue Oyster Priest concert.
The Blue Oyster Priest concert?
Oh, yeah.
You mean Blue Oyster Cult?
No, it was the what?
Black Priest?
You mean Judas Priest?
Yeah, it was the Judas Priest show. It was at the Universal Amphitheater. That's where we went.
Okay, so now that we have that...
All right, enough about the priest or the Judas. What are you talking about when you said you pulled over for butter?
I didn't pull over butter, but on the liquid butter.
I can't understand them.
You know what, Mr. Dooley, if you're going to do the talking...
I'll do the talking, Steve. Give me the phone. Give me the phone. Steve pulled off to a Vons. We'd been talking, and he said, well, if you really want to, I've got to pull over for liquid butter.
Oh, I get it. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you call that moral depravity so much as...
Yeah, have you ever done it yourself?
No woman's never... She's never allowed me.
Yeah.
Well, too bad for you.
Yeah, too bad for you.
Oh, really? You trying to tease me with this now?
Look, I don't want to get any further into this discussion if you don't mind. So there's an example of a guy who engaged in some kind of moral depravity.
I wouldn't call that the depths of moral depravity.
At the time, it was for me.
You bet it was. She sucked. It wasn't so much me, it's my body.
What did you say?
He said it wasn't so much sinking to the depths of moral depravity for him as it was him taking me there.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, wow, I'm all of a sudden getting turned on.
Oh, my God.
Get out there. Stop that.
I'm sorry.
All right, you know what? We don't need to hear about that. I thank you very much, Ms. Dooley.
Well, first of all, he insulted me very much.
What I was saying there, Billy.
Okay, are you with me?
Am I with you? What, did I pass out?
Let me just say one thing to you, Don. We're taking phone calls, okay?
Hold on for a minute. Do you hear that one, Billy? Do you get on tape? I got Billy taping the show. I hope you don't mind.
Well, yeah, I do.
For news gathering purposes.
All right.
And I wanted to make sure Billy got that whole conversation about the... Damn.
All right, I want to say something to you. You talking about how turned on you're getting is not advancing this conversation at all.
Is that on the air?
Yes, it was on the air.
Well, why didn't you dump it?
Why am I going to dump it?
Because it's me. Oh, my God. Why didn't you dump that out? I'm a news anchor on a major television station in Los Angeles, and you didn't dump out me saying that I was getting turned on by the fact that a woman had been wrenched to the depths of moral depression. I got to hang up.
Okay, so he had, you know, so there's Don Berman panicking again.
What'd he do?
He got panicky over the fact that he was talking to me about his sex life. For all, you know, I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. If you want to come on the program and you want to broach the subject yourself, you can do that. But then don't start screaming at me because I didn't dump this, that, or something else. We have Ms. Dooley back. Ms. Dooley?
Yes, Phil. I'm sorry, but I have never, ever been spoken to in quite that way.
We talking about Don Berman is hung up.
No, I'm not talking about Don Berman. I'm talking about my husband, Steve. And
your husband, Steve?
Yes. I had to kick him out of the car. I have never had a man come on a live radio show and talk about grabbing me by the hair and pulling me to the lower depths of depravity.
Well, I'm awfully sorry. I didn't. That's your husband talking.
I understand that.
Was he telling the truth?
That, yes, he was, but that's not his job.
Where is he? You've kicked him out of the car.
I did kick him, but I'm... I feel that I need to turn around. I kicked him out of the car. The car was moving.
The car was moving?
Yeah.
Hold on for a minute, Bobby, okay?
Phil, I am so...
Bud, what do you got?
We were taping it in an audition channel. She didn't know, but she had a conversation with her husband. And I was like, we had to tape it.
You have a tape of what?
We got a tape of her kicking him out of the car.
Well, I don't know, man. Maybe it's not legal, huh?
It is newsworthy. Yeah, you always said, man, if it has a public interest or something like that.
Yeah, if there is a public, if there is a compelling public interest. All right, play it. Have you got it racked up?
Yeah, rack it up now. You're going to hear them. They're going to be talking. It won't sound like nothing, but they're going to be talking in the background.
What's that?
I said, one of them was on the talking in the background.
Whatever. Go ahead. Roll it.
Did Steve talking about liquid butter? Good God Almighty, do you have to? I don't.
You said I could.
I said that you could, Steve. I didn't ask you to tell everyone that I was wrenched to the depths of depravity. You know, you sicken me, Steve. You sicken me a lot.
Hey, buddy, let's just chill out, okay? It's your world, babe. Your world, boss. I'm just picking grapes in it. And another thing,
I'm kicking you out of the car.
Wait a minute. Ah!
What is that?
We think it was his cell phone. Yeah, we think they were on his cell phone. She kicked him out.
Wow, that's... get Ms. Dooley. Ms. Dooley?
Yes?
We do have tape of you kicking your husband out of the car.
You have that on tape?
Yes, we do, ma'am.
Can you... Is there anything on that tape that can give you some indication as to where we were?
No, ma'am, there isn't.
Because I've turned around and I'm going down. I'm going back northbound on the 5. I don't see him anywhere.
Well, where were you?
I don't know. I have no idea. Why should I know that?
Are you driving?
I guess I am driving, Phil, if I kicked him out of the car.
Wow.
Woo! Boy, you... Phi Beta Kappa all the...
I don't give a damn, you know?
Yeah, but she's looking for her husband.
I don't care. I don't care if she never finds him. How about that? We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Bobby and Steve Dooley and our News and Information Hour coming up.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah!
Famous.
Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And coming up next hour, Bob Green from Fraser Foods is going to check back in with us tonight on the Mega Millions jackpot. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have bought tickets or what.
Yeah, I heard all about it. Probably going to get one. I got a couple. And my aunt got one, too.
Your aunt Mavis?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk with Bob Green about the Mega Millions jackpot and the selling of these tickets and what it means to his business there at Fraser Foods in Buena Park and across the southern, across the whole United States, with the retailers everywhere, seeing the kind of business that you get when these things get hot. There's a $500 million. I can tell you this. I say this with the greatest honesty. Whoever wins it, I wish you the very best. I hope you do something really good with that much money. There's a lot of good you can do with a $500 million.
You can buy the Dodgers.
No, you'd need $2 billion to buy. We just saw that $2 billion. But you could buy the. I'll tell you what you could buy with the $500 million. You could buy a nice position with the Dodgers.
What do you mean by that?
A position. That's a financial term meaning you could buy a part ownership in it.
No, it sounded like you're talking about, sitting.
You shut up, bud, and turning everything dirty, okay?
You just talk about liquid butter.
I didn't talk about liquid butter. That woman did. I know what you mean, bud, okay? So in any event, for a $500 million, though, I tell you what you could buy. You could buy that parking. You know how they spent, what they spend on that? They spent $150 million. Frank McCourt, and I guess Frank McCourt's holding on to a piece of that. So I should say, as these so-called affiliates of the Dodger buyers purchased the in consort with Frank McCourt, or in tandem with him, they bought the parking around the stadium for $150 million. That's the land, and it's valuable land. As a matter of fact, they have in Elysian Park there, which is near Dodger Stadium. If you see the parking lot, Elysian Park is the larger area, and there's a big National Guard armory there. There is the training center for the L.A. County Fire Department.
That's the one I saw those guys jogging that time.
That's right, because just a little bit of inside Hollywood. When we were filming, or when I was filming my little scene there in Semi-Pro, with
Will Ferrell and Woody Harrelson, and you weren't cut out because they had
it. All right, I got it, bud. Okay, thanks. In any event, we filmed the basketball scenes there at that basketball gym in the armory there near the L.A. County Fire Training Center. So it was interesting because we had the entire parking lot there at that particular facility. It was pretty much the parking for the cast and the crew, and then they had the trailers and they had the food and everything, and then they were shooting inside the gym there. But as we were working, and you'd go inside and they would shoot, and then you'd come outside. In those days, I was smoking, so I was going back and forth outside smoking a cigarette. You saw the fire department trainees, and I don't know if they were trainees or maybe they were regular fire department guys that were just maybe looking to step up in class, training for some other aspect of firefighting. But you saw them coming out in a line, jogging up this hill. I mean, they were doing some brutal kinds of training. They were going up the side of this hill and coming back down, and they go back inside. Everywhere they went, they were running.
Right over there near Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, right near Dodger Stadium is the fire department. So we're not talking about anybody owning that, but it's all that land there. And there's, like I said, there's a pretty prime piece of park, Elysian Park, where folks go. It's really beautiful. There's a lot of the eucalyptus trees there. And if you've ever smelled eucalyptus, it's very much like...
Mr. Bob.
Yeah, David?
Yeah, you got to wrap this up or...
Am I going to wrap up what?
I had to call Mr. Hall because of the eucalyptus.
You're going on about eucalyptus trees. That starts to get...
Wait a second. Just hold on for just a second here. I was talking about being in that movie Semi-Pro and...
Oh, that part was interesting. I was loving that. And Bud gave me the high sign that you were doing good. And
I'm going to talk to you about this thing you got with Bud, huh?
It ain't gay or nothing.
What do you mean, the thing I got with Bud?
I'm not saying it's gay. I mean him reporting directly to you. That's going to end.
Oh, come on, Phil.
No, that's ending. He works for me. So he's not talking to you. He's not going to be getting any information from you or for you.
Look, I got to know what's going on over there.
I got a great idea. How about turning the radio on?
Oh, really? me turn the radio on. That's a great idea. Oh, wait a second. There's one problem with turning the radio on. I can't hear what you're talking about during the commercial.
Well, why do you need to know that?
Because, Phil, I got to know whether, you know, you're going to pull something that's going to destroy another advertiser for us.
I haven't done anything to destroy advertisers, and I don't need you talking that way on the air. Last night, you called me up and ripped me an ass in front of everybody because of the muted audio.
Right, and you needed it.
Okay, I needed it. Tonight, I don't need to hear this.
All I'm telling you is, when you go on, let me just say this, okay? It's good. What I'm going to say is good.
Go ahead.
I thought it was fascinating what you were saying about the movie with Will Ferrell. That was great. And it was fascinating what you were saying about the, about Dodger Stadium. When you started talking about the eucalyptus trees, it began, how do I say it?
Fuck, it didn't sound manly.
It wasn't sounding manly.
I think Bud here, your good buddy, already said it sounded gay.
I don't mean that in a homophobic
way?
Right.
Yes, of course you do.
No, I do not. No, I do not.
That's why that word is just so comfortable for you. I'm sure you've discussed these issues many times.
Don't look, Phil, don't turn me into some kind of a bigot or a homophob. I don't know.
Homophob.
It's not homophob.
I didn't say homophob.
It's homophobe. Okay, and because I'm talking about eucalyptus trees, it happens to be a distinctive, it's very distinctive when you drive your car through there. You can smell the eucalyptus trees.
Well, isn't that nice?
Okay. Okay.
You did pretty funny.
Don't tell me. I smell eucalyptus trees.
Think it's funny, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty funny, you gotta admit it.
Well, I don't think it is.
Now, we're talking about the eucalyptus tree, man. You sound like you're a member of some ladies' flower club or something.
Boy, you guys are really weird, man. You mean you can't talk about trees and flowers without sounding like I belong to a ladies' flower club?
You do.
Oh, but you can and you sound fine.
I think I sound fine if I talk about eucalyptus.
Eucalyptus. I'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. Shut up. I'm gonna kick somebody's ass, I mean it.
Phil Hendry. Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. So you guys, while you were, you know, doing your thing during the break, we're talking here about television.
I can't believe what you said about The Wire, though. That's the most dumbest thing.
Now, why don't you like The Wire? Now, before we get into discussions of The Wire or anything else, all I said to Dan was, and if I sound like a dumbass, I'm probably sounding about as dumbass as most people. I know that it's my job, being a member of the media, to stay a little bit more up on what's happening in media, but I cannot possibly stay abreast of everything that's happening in terms of new television shows. It's enough to try to stay abreast of what's happening when the movies come out. My favorite form of entertainment, if you want to get right down to it, are movies. Secondly, documentaries. Thirdly, really, 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 really well done TV shows. And I'm here to tell you, bud, The Wire ain't one of them.
Oh, man. Are you? That show's a fan. You know, if I told half the people out there,
yeah,
that what you said, they'd laugh until they peed.
Well, I guess there's going to be a lot of people peeing. I'm telling you, The Wire was the biggest disappointment of my life. People talking about The Wire. Let me tell you why The Wire was big with a lot of people. The Wire was a big show for people whose only frame of reference was Miami, whatever the hell, Miami CSI, those shows. New York CSI or whatever. If that's your only frame of reference for a good cop show, then yeah, The Wire was probably really good. But The Wire, first of all, right away, man, when you turn on The Wire, all these cops look like they're right out of GQ. right away, that's going to blow it for you. The cops look like that. If you're going to show me a cop show, will you show me a cop show? Or what are you trying to tell me here?
Well, yeah, it's a cop show, man. But, I mean, you got to have good-looking people. Nobody's going to want to watch it.
Well, I beg to differ, man. I beg to differ. You know, I do. You say you got to have good-looking cops or no one's going to want to watch it. I don't understand that at all. I think people appreciate more than anything. Look, people watched The Sopranos, didn't they?
Yeah.
The Sopranos, you telling me there's, you know, they had maybe the odd woman looked fantastic on that show, but for the most part, everybody on that show was ugly as hell.
Oh, man, that's not true, man.
Tell me somebody who was good-looking on that show.
What about that Adriana?
That's one. Next.
Well, I mean, they're criminals.
Okay, and even the cops. Look, the point that I'm making here, they're criminals. So what, people are saying what? Well, they're criminals. And the cops have got to be handsome? I don't understand that. People are not that discerning and discriminating to say, oh, well, criminals need to be ugly, but cops have got to be really handsome. Huh? People want reality with their criminals, but they don't want reality with their cops? Or are you saying that people don't want any reality at all, so all the criminals have got to be ugly?
That's what I'm saying. If people don't want no reality at all, all criminals got to be ugly.
Well, if people don't want any reality at all, then Sopranos is not their show, because Sopranos had nothing but reality in it.
Well, what kind of reality are you talking about?
The violence. You know, the violence. It seems like they obviously had covered the Cosa Nostra or mafia culture pretty well. But just the violence of the people involved itself was so palpable and palpable. It was right there in front of you. It was real, and it was very... it was jarring, and it was realistic, and it was compelling. Now, this Wire... I've never seen a show with a bigger buildup and a bigger disappointment than watching that thing. And I say that with all due respect. You cannot trust the word of mouth, because people are going to tell you something is, oh, it's the greatest thing you ever saw in your life. Have you seen The Wire? And it wasn't.
But what other show are you talking about?
I don't know, man. I mean, if you hang around the people I hang around on Twitter, you'd swear this Downton Abbey is the greatest thing that's ever happened to television. It's a British-made show about some bloody period in the past. Now, the British do that with television. They're always making TV shows about their past because they've got a very impressive past. They got a lot of material, you know.
Yeah, they're always making TV show about a queen or something. Yeah, what about that one they did about that one king?
You mean Henry VIII?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one king.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, what... He was a king, right?
Henry VIII, yeah, he was a king, I think. Yeah, he was like one of the most famous kings that England's ever had. Yeah, they're making TV shows about that guy. You mean it's called The Tudors, is that it?
Yeah, but that one king they got.
Yeah, he was a Tudor. He was a...
What's that mean?
It's like the House of Tudor, the House of Windsor. These are family names, and the lineage extends from that until the lineage is no longer that lineage, then it becomes something else. I don't know how it works, man. You're asking the wrong guy. But the fact is, there's been a lot of different ones down to the history of England. So along come these Tudors.
As opposed to four-door. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, thanks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, high-five each other later, okay, as opposed to four-door. you know what, Bud? You're sounding more and more like that Billy Wells guy that...
Yeah, I'm saying that guy's a real man. That sounds like he was born with his brain outside of his skull.
Yeah, that Billy Wells is whack.
Well, you sound a lot like him, born with his brain outside his skull. That's disgusting.
That's a real condition.
Okay, well, great. Then you should not make a joke out of it, okay, Robert?
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying...
I was going to say, my aunt, she watched that show Downton Abbey, and she watched that Tudor, that one about Henry VIII.
Your Aunt Mavis?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, some people are into that, man. I'm telling you, but the whole point that I'm trying to make here is that show, that Downton Abbey, was the biggest hit. Oh, man, everybody was talking about it that I knew. Now, probably the people that are listening to our show right now, a talk radio audience in the middle of the night, lots of truck drivers, they wouldn't know Downton Abbey from whatever the hell, you know.
Sir Abby Hall.
Right. Who's that one Abby I was trying to think of?
Hoffman.
Abby Hoffman. Anyway, so the I don't know, but that show was really big. And it's from British TV. Now, here come the Brits. They bring their TV shows over here, and they become smash hits. And if they don't bring them over here, what we do is we license them. That's what American producers do. They license. That's what The Office did. The Office licensed their show from the British producers of the original Office, which is I love that show.
The British one.
I think the British Office is funnier than hell.
Yeah, you know, every time you talk about that, though, man, if anybody listening from the American Office, they're pissed off, probably never want to work with you again.
I don't want anybody to get pissed off at me. I'm just being honest. My audience doesn't, I don't care. I got to be honest with the audience. And the American-made Office is fine. It's fine. Steve Carell is a riot. I love him. Love him. I'm just saying, I thought that the British-made one was funnier. But the whole point that I'm making here is that's what they make TV shows out of over there in England. So they got all these shows about their past. They got a show about this king, that king, some crap going on. Who knows? They had a show over there. One of my favorite shows that they did was a show called Danger UXB.
Yeah, you tell me about that. Is that about a bomb?
Yeah, Danger UXB was about these squads of guys. This is a TV show. It was a weekly TV show in Britain. And it was about the guys that worked in squads in World War II looking for unexploded bombs. That's what Danger UXB meant. Danger, unexploded bomb. And these guys had to go out and find these bombs that had not exploded. They were duds, but they're sitting out there with this explosive in them, and they're going to hurt somebody. So,
how you doing a TV show about that?
Well, you're doing it about the guys. You're doing it about the pressures of the job. You're doing it about the pressures of the wartime experience, the pressure of having to defuse a bomb, their home situation, their wives, their girlfriends, what it's like in the army, you know. And it was a very good show. It was a very good show. It was very well done, very well acted. And it was a dramatic, a melodramatic weekly series, you know. But that's what they do over there. And they seem to have, in Great Britain, an appreciation for good television. Because I'm going to tell you right now, hands down, British TV kicks the crap out of American TV.
Man, that's bull crap.
Well, I'm just saying, over the air.
Why do you think they got something as good as Sopranos?
What do you mean if they got something as good as Sopranos? Yeah, they probably do, but Sopranos is great. But Sopranos, keep in mind, is on a pay channel. It's on an HBO channel. You have to pay extra to get that. I'm talking about the regular over-the-air product in Great Britain. When you talk about a dramatic TV show as opposed to American drama or like that, it's way better.
I disagree. I've seen one show over there. That was the stupidest show I ever saw in my life. It wasn't even interesting or anything.
Which one was it?
Dame Edna.
Dame Edna? That's not...
Dame Edna? Yeah, I saw that too. That Dame Edna. That was weird.
Yeah, it's a guy dressed as a lady.
I understand. That's not a good example. Dame Edna was... First of all, Dame Edna...
Wait a minute, what's your name?
Dame Edna.
You said Edna.
Yeah, you said Eb something.
I said Edna.
Not really. We can play it back if you want.
No, we're not going to play it back. I don't want to hear it again. I said Edna. That's different. That's an Australian actor named Barry Humphreys who went to Britain and did a series of specials. It's a different thing, okay? In fact, Dame Edna was on TV over here.
I never saw it.
Yeah, I missed that one.
It was on in the 80s, okay? So you guys were probably playing, I don't know what, flag football. All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Got lots of news, lots of stuff to get through here, of course. What's up with Santorum, man? Has he quit yet? He hasn't? Oh, great. Gingrich? Nope, he hasn't quit either. We got other news here about a lady who has been charged with murder for helping a healthy man commit suicide. She just sort of helped him to the pearly gates. How about that?
Pretty whack, man.
And we'll give you a little bit of a sports rundown, and we'll tell you what else is happening in the world of movies. What flicks are out? What flicks are stiffing? What flick is kicking ass? I can give you a hint. It's called The Hunger Games. How's that for a hint? On the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Robert's aunt, Mavis Leonard, on the line with us. Mavis, dear, the reason why we called you is because Robert had been talking to us, hon, about the shows you're watching. Okay, is she...
Hey, Audie.
I'm watching right now. Seeing a show, Helen Mirren show.
Okay, dear, we didn't have you on the air. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah. I heard my heard my nephew yelling at me. You don't have to yell at me, Robert.
I know. Well, Mr. Henry, I want to know you there.
I'm here. Does it sound like I'm someplace else? I'm here.
No, I don't laugh.
Don't yell, fool. You yell, it's going right through my skull.
Yeah, okay, Mr. Henry, just want to know.
Oh, man, you yell at piercing my skull. Oh, it goes through the skull.
All right, well, this is Phil.
Yes, Phil, how you doing?
I'm good, Mavis. What show are you watching now?
I'm looking at my, I've got my DVD.
Okay, it's a DVD.
What DVD, what?
Oh, man, oh, baby, that goes through the skull. Every time you open your mouth, you remind me of your father. That big la 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 la. My brother, you know, was this man, Robert's father, you know. He died, had a heart attack, and come back, man, had a big business, you know.
My dad died of a heart attack.
I was telling Mr. Henry that. You don't have to repeat it.
I'm sorry to hear that. What happened?
He had a business over here, had a machine shop, you know, and he did all kinds of work over there. He did die of a heart attack one day. I always tell people it's because they sent Robert over to give him lunch, and he finally took one good long look at what this kid was turning out to be and just went, oh, Lord, just, you know, fell over.
That's mean, you said, because I got a big head.
You got the biggest head of any man I've ever seen in my life. It's three times the size of your father's head. Abnormally large.
No, I don't see that. I mean, Robert's right in front of me.
No, his head is abnormally large. That's why, anyway, I tell him that every time he go to sleep on the couch, you know, he fall off the couch. But only his head does. The rest of him stays on the couch.
Yeah, well, that's better than the last time you said all these people come over and spend the night at your house.
All these people come over spend the night at my house. Just people for my bridge party.
But they're falling off the couch.
They saw the whole body fall off the couch, not just the head.
Okay, can we just, I don't know.
That's the weirdest thing I ever heard.
Is that idiot? Is that idiot?
Yes, ma'am, it's Bud.
Man, you are. You strictly from hunger, son. Oh, man.
His head ain't that big.
No, his head ain't big, but his head's bent. You got a big head, and he got a head that's caved in.
Okay, I wanted to ask you.
You don't have to yell like Robbie. You know, the two of you guys, you go, okay, it goes through my skull like lightning. It's like a bolt of lightning going through my skull every time I hear you or Robert say something.
What are you talking about, Alan?
Oh.
I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yeah, it's a lot better.
What are you watching right now?
I told you, I'm looking at my DVD.
You're looking at a DVD of what?
Are you listening here, looking at a DVD of what? Looking at a DVD of TV show?
What's the name of the TV show?
Oh.
Yeah, what? I'm on TV.
Oh. Ow.
Shut up, Robert. I'll do it, okay? What's the TV show?
Oh. I'm going to start bleeding from the nose. I got to listen to that boy again. He's going to come over here. I know you're spending the night here, aren't you?
Yeah, of course I am.
Oh, damn, now I got to get out to Esther Divan and make sure your head don't fall off the couch.
What is the DVD you're watching?
I'm watching a DVD of Prime Suspect with a Helen Mirren. I love this show so deeply.
Yeah, we're like all them PBS show, a BBC show, too.
I'm telling the man about that.
Oh, you like that show, Helen Mirren? Prime Suspect, huh?
Oh, yeah, I love that show. I look at that show. And I also look at that show, Downtown Abbey. I like that show, too.
Now, what is that show about?
Oh, it's a wonderful show about all these white people. Sticking each other in the back, you know. I love that. They're all very wealthy whites, and all they do is shank each other in the back every episode. It's a beautiful thing. I like that show, and then I watch Cat House, and then I go to sleep.
What is Cat House?
That one on Cinemax.
Yeah, that's a show on Cinemax about a man on a cat house.
Is that right? I've never heard of that show.
Oh, yeah, it's a good show. This is a real dumbass. He's going to get himself arrested, I know that. Every week I look at that show, Cat House, waiting for this guy to get arrested. He got a whorehouse over there, you know. It's funny. It's very relaxing to watch that.
So those are your favorite shows. Well, we wanted to ask you that because we were talking about these shows tonight. Have you ever seen The Two Doors?
No, that's that show Robert watched. That's a stupid-ass show if ever I've seen one. It got that one man I think is a latent homosexual.
You talk about Maurice Davies.
Oh, will you shut up, please?
Is he he's talking about Martin, what's the guy's name, Reese Davies or something like that?
I don't know what his name is. He's the one to play King Henry.
Right, I think that's the guy.
That's the most homosexual show I've ever seen. I will not allow myself to see that. I will not allow myself, as a Christian, I'll not look at that show.
That's the two-door show, though.
I don't care what it calls. It doesn't make any difference for me. So that's what you call a cabinet or someplace you hang your clothes, two-door. Or something like that.
I said it sounded like it's four-door.
Tell that kid with a caved-in head to shut up.
You gotta shut up, man. My honesty can't take it.
I can't take you either.
And all right, okay, so you're watching the two-doors. Anything else?
I watch the two-doors, and I watch the, I don't watch the two-doors.
I mean, you're watching Prime Suspect, you watch Downton Abbey. What else?
I watch, I like to see that show they have on EastEnders.
Yeah, the EastEnders, that's an old show. Is that one of the old British shows?
Yeah, I love that show. All them Cockney people, they sound like a bunch of dumbass. I love them. I like any show where they all sound like dumbass. But I love the EastEnders because they sound almost as dumb as my nephew. Talking all that mess, you know?
Yeah, they all talking like things like, we gotta get a spot of tea, like that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, say, I'll go get a spot of tea. Oh, say, I'm gonna go have myself something. Here's what he says. I'm gonna have some bangers and mash, eh? It sounds like that Adele bitch. You ever heard her?
All right, let's not call anybody a bitch.
I'm sorry. Have you ever heard Adele?
Yes, I have.
Did you hear that woman on a Grammy show?
I did, yeah.
Oh, Lord. She sounds like she ought to be pushing a cart down the street someplace over there. That old blimey, I won me a Grammy. How about that?
Hey, I won a Grammy. Blimey, I won a Grammy. Hey, I got a pot of tea.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I'm just doing an Adele impression.
I do the Adele impression. You don't do no Adele impression. I do them all. I got Adele covered here. I'm going to do it for going to have our church social on Sunday, Phil.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What are you going to do, Adele?
What's that mean?
I mean, are you going to do an impression of her?
Yeah, I'm going to do an impression. I'll get up, I'll say, I want some bangers and mash. I put on a big white horse, right, you know, because she got a big ass.
All right, well, have fun watching television. We just wanted to check in.
Hey, I'll be home right after the show.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Ha, ha, ha. Good night, Ms. Leonard.
Get your head fixed, son.
Get my hair fixed?
Your head. God, oh, man.
I think we woke her up or something.
No. She's always waiting, walking on the TV. And she got a DVD player and everything. That's why she's walking on the DVD.
She's watching her DVDs. Does she even know what it is she's watching?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes she don't, though.
She just puts those DVDs in and lets it go, huh?
Yeah, it's a lot of old people are like that.
Well, all right. Well, thank your aunt when you see her again for the TV review. I really appreciate that. We're going to have, as we push through the remainder of the show tonight, I might mention a couple of the things. I did actually want to mention, do we have Mr. Green coming on, too?
Yeah, we've got Robert Green. Excuse me, I almost threw up.
Yeah, I tasted some throw-up, too.
Well, that's really nice to know. When's Mr. Green? Let's push him to the 45 break.
All right.
Robert Green coming up from Fraser Foods later on in the hour as well. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. The story here on Trayvon Martin, the latest story is there's a witness that's come forward, somebody who is a witness that I guess had not been spoken to before by the media. I don't know if this person is unknown to the police. I hope that they're not. I don't like this idea of, oh, we have a new witness. Well, okay, I understand. Where were you before? This is not a situation where I know that the feelings are running high, but I suppose anyone that saw something that would favor George Martin, maybe they're reluctant to come forward. But here is what this George Martin, that guy produced the Beatles.
Yeah, you can shoot anybody.
George Zimmerman, that's the guy I'm talking about, Someone has stepped up reporting to have witnessed last month's... Well, I don't know. Maybe George Martin has shot someone.
Yeah, maybe he was in the army doing a war or something.
Yeah, he didn't shoot no kid walking down the street with a Skittle bag.
Well, okay. Someone has stepped up reporting to have witnessed last month's shooting of Trayvon Martin, an unarmed 17-year-old whose death has sparked nationwide controversy. The witness detailed to CNN the Florida incident from what initially sounded like an argument to its fatal conclusion. This is CNN. So this is an individual that has, from this account, at least from the very beginning accounts of this story, has not talked to the police. So right away, I got a problem. You got a risk. You're running more of a risk talking to the media than you do talking to the police. It would have to be, and I'll tell you why. It's because if you talk to the media, you're talking to the media, and the chances of your name being attached to something a lot more exploitive are heightened, I think. If you're talking to the cops and you're giving a statement to the police, people are assuming, well, the guy's got to speak the truth. Because the cops are going to sit there and say, tell us the truth. Because if you don't, you got a whole lot of hurt coming down on top of you. So if I heard a guy gave a statement to the police and the statement was, let's say, one that favored George Zimmerman, I would have to believe that this guy is speaking as honestly as he can from his witnessing of this thing, his perception of this thing, which is not to say that he saw everything you needed to say, or he saw it from beginning to end, or he saw he was not what he was seeing was out of context. It's just that he's being honest about what he did see. But some guy going to CNN,
and a witness has come forward.
Really? To who?
CNN.
Well, that really, that's logical. Why CNN?
Maybe they already talked to the cops.
That's possible. Maybe they already did talk to the cops. In any event, it would have to be starting with hearing voices. This is what this person is saying. With two men or two people on the ground, one on top of each other, the witness who has asked not to be identified, even by gender, told CNN's Anderson Cooper about the 26th incident, February 26th. The witness reported hearing through a closed window voices from an area where residents typically walk their dogs. I thought it was rather loud, but I just shut my window because it had started pouring rain. And then I thought, oh my gosh, who's out there walking their dog in the rain? But the witness did not immediately look outside to see what the commotion was about, according to the account. I went and I did something else, and then I heard the loud voices again, said the witness who reported opening the window. It definitely was a very loud, predominant voice. I couldn't hear the words, but it was like, okay, this is not a regular conversation. This is someone aggressively, you know, yelling at someone. The witness recounted seeing two men on the grass, one on top of the other, and at that point, not looking out the window, I heard the yell for help, one yell for help, and then I heard another excruciating type of yell. That's the one that, if you listen to the 911 call, you hear this howl, and it sounds like it's a howl of pain. It didn't almost sound like help, it just sounded so painful, but I wasn't watching out the window during that. And then the next time I looked out the window, there's the same thing, two men on the grass, one on top of each other. I couldn't see a lot of movement. It was very dark, but I felt like they were scuffling, and then I heard the gunshots, which to me were more like pops than they were like a bang. It definitely was more than one pop noise, so I don't know if it was an echo or anything else. The witness said the shots were audible as one man was on top of the other, but the witness recalled not having been able to see clearly which man was on top because it was dark. Within a couple of seconds after the shots, one of the men was walking toward where I was watching, and I could see him a little bit clearer. I could see it was a Hispanic man. He didn't appear hurt or anything else. What's this broken nose stuff? You break your nose, and there's at least some redness and swelling, and I don't know, maybe this person couldn't see clearly. How about we see a picture of this guy? I guess the cops don't want to release that either, huh? Well, they didn't arrest him, so they have no mugshot. So we just basically are going on the word of George Zimmerman, what George Zimmerman told the cops. Okay? Tell me if I'm saying something wrong here.
Yeah, well, I mean, he said what George Zimmerman said to the cops and what the cops believe George Zimmerman said, and that's it.
Well, who are these? Did they interview any of these witnesses? I got witnesses here that are coming out of the woodwork. Ever since this thing happened or broke in the news, all of a sudden there's all kinds of people that saw this, they saw that, they saw this, they saw that, they saw another guy, they saw another guy. Here's a guy talking to Anderson Cooper. Did the cops talk to these people? You got at least one cop that we know of, because we, you know, this man made a statement, and he made the statement in an affidavit on the night that this happened, saying we should have arrested this guy for manslaughter. You got at least one cop, and he wasn't a patrol officer; he was an investigator. And I'll tell you one other thing too. Just there's only one guy that had a gun that night. There's only one guy that was following another guy that night. There's only one guy that was told by the police dispatcher to stop following that night. And there's only one guy that fired a gun that night, because he's the only guy that had a gun that night. Now, I can see how this thing's starting to play out in the minds of the American public. I think for the most part, people are, I shouldn't say, but I think for the most part, a lot of people are seeing this clearly. But I can see where the George Zimmerman faction is beginning to emerge. Well, you don't know. I mean, the facts aren't all out yet. Well, what facts are you going to present to me, man, that makes it cool for a guy to shoot another guy who isn't armed? A guy who was told by the cops to lay off, a guy who's got a record of being a complete pain in the ass when it comes to the police, calling in things left, right, and central, a guy who's following a kid, and why? Because the kid's got on a hoodie, because the kid's eating Skittles? I don't know why the hell he's following him. Because he's black? Because he doesn't belong there? What's he doing bothering this guy? See, you know, this guy, Zimmerman, is provoking. Now, some people may say, oh, give me a break, provoking. He's being a good neighbor. No. Oh, I guess. I don't know. This boy belonged there. He was staying with his father. He wasn't an interloper. He wasn't a guy who'd come in from some other... He wasn't walking around in there like he didn't know where he was going, and like nobody knew him, and like he's lost, and he's a stranger. This kid was staying there. So, you know, you can make all kinds of stuff out of this. People can get all kinds of crazy about this. But if you stop and you think, what the hell are we talking about? We're talking about some jackball with a gun. He's got a concealed weapons permit. I'd still like to know why he had that. You know, you have to have, you have to apply for that. To get a concealed weapons permit, at least here in the state of California, in the state of New York, and some other states, I don't know about Florida. I don't know what you got to be or what you got to have to get a concealed weapons permit in Florida, but in a lot of states, you got to have a fairly decent reason. Why is this? To protect police officers. To protect police officers. So the cop isn't coming up on a guy with a concealed weapons permit who shouldn't have one. And a cop's up there on a traffic stop, and this guy's got a gun in his belt because he's got a permit to have that gun in his belt. The next thing you know, you got a dead cop. Why is that? Because this guy got a concealed weapons permit. How come? Oh, I don't know. Maybe he got it in Florida. So what's this jackass got a concealed weapons permit for? Mr. Captain of the Neighborhood Watch. He's already got a record. He's already got an arrest for some altercation with a cop. So this guy's got a mugshot, which is the one that we saw from that arrest, having to do with some altercation or some interaction with a police officer. So this guy Zimmerman, I ain't saying the guy is a bad guy. I'm saying the guy's pretty high strung to be any kind of a neighborhood watch guy, and I damn sure don't think this guy ought to be rolling around at night with the rain coming down in his truck with a gun. Now, according to Robert Zimmerman, who is the brother of George Zimmerman, and I'm not going to be, I don't want to be a cynic here, folks, but you know, would you please take this with a grain of salt? This is, after all, his brother. His brother, Robert, said that Trayvon Martin said to his brother, George, something to the effect of, you're going to die now or you're going to die tonight, something to that effect. Robert Zimmerman speaking to the Orlando television station WOFL. He continued to beat George. At some point, George pulled his pistol and did what he did. A surveillance video from the... This is the brother speaking. A surveillance video now from the Sanford Police Headquarters the night of the incident raises questions about the description of a beating. It shows Zimmerman, his hands cuffed, exiting a patrol car and being led into the police station. First broadcast by ABC News, the video does not provide close-ups, but also does not show clear signs of injuries on Zimmerman. Sanford, Florida is now a divided city. Joe Oliver, a friend of Zimmerman, said Zimmerman told him he was cleaned up by cops at the scene that night before being taken to the station. Cleaned up by cops. Maybe they gave him a little bit of first aid. Joe Oliver said it was discovered the next day that Zimmerman's nose was broken. The next day. Craig Sonner, George Zimmerman's legal advisor, said Thursday the video does not support or contradict Robert Zimmerman's description. It is very grainy. Sonner also said the injuries Zimmerman said he suffered were later cleaned up. What's later? A police report says Zimmerman was bleeding from the nose and the back of his head when police arrived at the scene of the killing. He was first given aid in the police car. Sonner noted that at one point in the video, an officer appears to be looking at the back of Zimmerman's head. Zimmerman has not been charged. Asked whether Zimmerman's able to leave his home, given the death threats he's received, Oliver said, no, he is not. George Zimmerman's got a busted nose, and he's got scratches to the back of his head, and the other guy's dead from a gunshot wound. Dead from a gunshot from a guy who was following that guy. Following that guy even after the police told him to stop following that guy. Following a guy that wasn't armed. Following a guy that was minding his own business. Following a guy that was on his way back to his house or on his way to the store. Following a guy talking to his girlfriend on a cell phone. And you're going to try to get me to believe that this guy, all of a sudden, a guy being followed by this guy, all of a sudden this guy turned animal and killer and had to be dealt with in a deadly fashion. Poor George Zimmerman. Boy, that poor guy, man. All he was doing was following a guy with his loaded weapon, his concealed weapons permit, and his phone call to the police, and his tailing some dude who isn't armed. That's all he was doing. He's fine. It was the other guy, the more dangerous guy, who was armed with the Skittles and the Arizona iced tea, walking, one has to assume, with his back to this guy, on his way home or on his way someplace else. That's the guy we got to be worried about.
Huh? I don't get it.
I'm being facetious.
That means he's kidding.
Yeah, I know that.
Well, you know that now, huh?
Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic, man.
Oh.
God. You understand what I'm saying, huh?
No, I'm not saying, man, but that kid wasn't doing nothing.
Yeah, he wasn't doing nothing from the standpoint of when we first arrived, when we first in our mind's eye see George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin's not doing anything. He's walking, and he's being followed. And we know this from the 911 call. This guy's calling, saying, there's the guy, he's walking, he looks bad, he's this, he's that. Okay, you still follow him? Yeah, I am. Well, I need you to stop doing that. Why was he following the guy? Because he had a hoodie. The kid wasn't armed. Nothing. Now the kid's dead, and somebody is going to get me to believe, just like in a million other incidences in the history of American justice and criminality, somebody's going to try to get me to believe that that kid, unarmed, Skittles, iced tea, and a cell phone, that kid somehow deserved to die. Well, I ain't buying it anymore, folks. I'm not buying that bullcrap anymore, okay? I've heard enough of this stuff. I've heard people twisting it one way and the next. It's happened. If the kid's guilty about, you know, if that kid, if you could show me evidence of how that kid deserved to have to be shot and killed that night, I'd be happy to see it. But what I'm hearing tonight, and what I'm hearing in the nights preceding tonight, a whole lot of people doing all kinds of logistical and logical gymnastics. About, well, you know, I mean, we don't really what? Maybe the kid turned around and said this. Maybe he said, what are you following me for? Do you consider that an aggressive move?
No.
Is that something he shouldn't have done? I would have. If it was me, said the F word, I'd say, what are you following me for, man? What are you doing? And what's this guy going to say to me now with his concealed weapon? Hey, well, you know, what are you doing around here? What am I doing around here? I live here. I'm staying with my dad. Why don't you bug off, man? Hey, listen, man, you know, I'm just doing my job. You don't know what this guy Zimmerman said to this kid to escalate this thing. He got jumped. Yeah, let me tell you something. If I shot a guy to death and there were no witnesses, I'd say the same thing. Sure, yeah, he jumped me from behind, in fact. Oh, yeah. You know, you're going to say whatever you got to say to make it look like you're the poor, innocent guy. But if some guy is following you, I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, what are you going to say? I'm going to turn around, I'm going to look at that guy and say, what the hell is your problem, man? Why are you following me? Now, what do you think Zimmerman said to him? Mr. Neighborhood Watch, Mr. Captain, Mr. Concealed Weapon. I bet you it wasn't, I'm sorry, sir. I bet you money it wasn't that. I bet you it wasn't, gee, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you feel bad. I just was, you know, I'll back off. It was probably, so, well, what are you doing here? Oh, we got a break?
Yeah, you got a break.
Oh, sorry. We're going to break.
Been a break.
Thank you. We'll break. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show. We're breaking now.
Truth break, man. Is our sorry. Bitch. The
Get
Phil Henry
now.
Show.
Okay, all right.
Bill Henry Show.
Robert Green, I think we're going to get Robert Green on the line here tonight on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Bob Green is the, as you know, CEO at Frazier Foods. In fact, he was the subject of one of our questions last night in our Ted's of Beverly Hills hoodie competition. Bob, good evening.
Good evening, Phil.
And how do you like being the one of the questions?
I'm very honored to be one of the questions in your Ted's of Beverly Hills contest. Anything to get a little bit of anything to get a little bit of love here for Frazier Foods.
Bob, I wanted to ask you about the Mega Millions.
All right.
And the tickets that you guys sell for any one of these lotteries, any of the lotteries that are prevalent across the country or regionally. Gosh knows we have them here in California. We have the larger lotteries that the country takes part in as a country. Tell me about this Mega Millions.
Well, a Mega Millions, Phil, is what is called a multi-state. It is a multi-state jackpot. My understanding is it's at a $540 million. It's a world record for a lottery.
World record.
That is correct, yes. As of Friday, back east, this is Friday here on the West Coast as well, players across the country are wondering if there's a way to guarantee becoming an overnight millionaire or not. So people are buying tickets. Of course, our store is closed now. The odds, by understanding, are now 1 in 176 million.
Does that mean that there are 176 million ticket buyers? Or
no, not necessarily. It means that there's 176 million tickets purchased, I believe, but that doesn't represent 176 million people. There may be fewer people based upon perhaps...
People sharing the...
People sharing the price of a ticket.
Do you know what the odds are of any individual store?
Not really. We've obviously sold our share. I have in the time that we've been here in Buena Park, we've pretty much service a suburban clientele. Our customers are suburban Los Angeles, suburban Orange County people. They tend to be a upper middle class, but we do have the odd homeless person coming in here. And, you know, it would be a shame for a homeless guy to win it only because I'm used to being kind to homeless people, and then all of a sudden the guy that I've been kind to, can buy and sell me. It's a tough one. It's real rough. I call it real rough jail sex. And
all right, we got to get going. We'll talk to you later, Bob Green. The Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Henry. And, of course, you can go online at philhenryshow.com and pick up your... backstage pass so that you can become a part of our BSP family. We thank you all for listening this evening. Until tonight, fare thee well. It's a gas.
Phil Henry.